Hi, everybody. I'm Gus Johnson along with the governor.
He says he got all his jeans from his mom. Woo. From his mom. Woo. A lot of nylon.
A lot of excitement in the air.
Yes.
And we're ready for college basketball. College basketball.
Oh, oh.
Gus.
Oh.
He's got onions.
Gus.
He's got onions.
Oh, oh.
Rise and fire.
Sets up the big fella to light it up. Yes, he's got onions.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to week two of the newly formed Marquette Barroom. I am your co-host, Tyler, along with my brother, Ryan. And today we are lucky enough to be joined by Andre Goreska of Paint Touches. You probably see him on Twitter, gives a comprehensive look to Marquette basketball, and he has painttouches.com. Andre, thank you for joining us on this fine Sunday afternoon.
You guys, thank you for having me. This is awesome. I can't wait.
Yeah, absolutely. Welcome to the Barroom. We're so excited to have you here. And just want to say, you know, I just want to do my brown nose in early. You're one of those accounts where you are such a ball knower that if you disagree with me, I'll rethink what I've said. You know?
Well, usually I'll DM you because we don't disagree on much. And you always have awesome breakdowns of all the teams. And that's what I always say. Like, it's not that it's easy, but when you focus on one team, it's one thing. Like, all I care about is Marquette. Like, I watch other teams, but I don't really, like, dive in or, like, think about it. But you guys do such a great job of kind of knowing the ins and outs of every Big East team. So I always give you guys your props. Like, that's hard. Like, you talk Marquette like you're a Marquette fan, and obviously you do that for 10 other teams too. So I'm always happy to join because you guys definitely love the Big East. I love what you guys do. So it's a good time for everybody.
And it's a great time to be a Marquette fan coming off the last 2 years, but now even coming into this season, you know, 15th ranked. I want to get into this week, but I think if we're going to have a celebrity Marquette fan on like you, Paint Touches, I do think it's important to talk about, like, what were your expectations coming into the season without Kolek, without Oso? Were you just as high on this team, or did you kind of go, we're due for some regression?
Well, we have a Discord chat with some people that we always do, like, our projections. You know, we do, we're gonna keep it grounded. Here's what I think. I had the second lowest projections for this team. I looked at 10 people that were in this chat. I think something around like 21 wins with like 9 or so. It's a 23-9, I think, was my final. I don't know if the math evens out. I'll have to check it out. But basically, I thought 3 losses in the non-con for sure, and then 6 or 7 in Big East play, because 13-7 in Big East play, like, outside of how the Big East is performing now, like, that's a good year. Like, I get that Marquette fans have been spoiled. We've gotten some incredible years the past two, where the win totals kind of piled up. But personally, I felt that this team, while still being good, still being top 3 in the conference, definitely a tournament team with Sweet 16 aspirations, I don't think it had quite the ceiling of last year's team, where I was a Debbie Downer internally, but had higher expectations. So for me, I think a step back was natural, not in the sense that you'd step back into like bubble territory, but step back from like top 10-ish year, all year round. That's not to say I'm right. Like, what I find is that I tend to be pessimistic in my outlook for Marquette. Maybe not as a self-defense mechanism, but sort of to protect myself. You know, when you get too hype on stuff and then stuff goes sideways, you tend to take it a little harder than if you kind of like, well, temper my expectations. So there's a little bit of kind of, like I said, self-protection in my general projections. I just thought as I was going through it, even though there's a lot of continuity, there's a lot of seniority that's coming back, and Cam Jones, like, I could talk about Cam Jones for 30 minutes if you had me on here, but I felt that there was pieces to be found, and I still feel there's pieces to be found. So I felt coming into the season that this would be a top 20-ish team, around a protected seed, so 4-3-4-5 around there, maybe a battling for top 3 in the Big East, and hopefully getting to the Sweet 16 again. Once you get there, you never know who gets hot. So again, I don't know. That probably puts me a little bit lower than an average Marquette fan per se. I haven't talked to all of them, and I didn't do my poll like I usually do. But that's where I came into the season.
I think that's perfectly logical, right? You lost two NBA players, right?
Yeah.
Two guys who are playing in the NBA. You know, Tyler Kolek's had nice minutes for the Knicks. Oso Iguodaro isn't on the G League team for the Suns. They're keeping him up there. So, you know, when you have that level of talent leave, I think that's a very, very logical way to look at it. But, man, they're kind of turning us into romantics pretty quick here, you know, this version.
Yeah, I mean, again, the nice thing about having this continuity is the you have an advantage early on. So, like, Marquette last year had an advantage compared to most teams because it was the same team minus Omax, you know. So, going into Maui, like, I was bullish on that Maui tournament because I'm like, these teams are going to take a little bit to gel. And, obviously, they made it to the finals. A couple shots go haywire, maybe offensive rebound or two or a defensive rebound or two. And we're talking about they're number one in the country at the time. Yes, a lot of stuff happened afterwards, but initially, as teams come together with more portal additions, with kind of newer faces on every single roster, teams like Marquette, teams like Purdue that bring back a ton of minutes need to make hay those first 4 or 5 weeks because other teams just don't have it yet. And teams like Marquette need to have it. So I had Marquette splitting between Maryland and Purdue. Initially, I had losing Maryland and winning Purdue, but then I kind of flip-flopped it. But yeah, generally speaking, I haven't changed my expectations. I do think Cam is better than I gave him credit for, which is tough because I thought he was like a top three player in the country. But he's right now, he's like, my homework glasses on. Like, he's the best guard in the country right now. No one is playing at his level. He's playing at a level that we haven't seen since Marcus Howard and doing it in a way that kind of gets the team involved. Like, he took over when he needed to against Maryland, but he really does a great job of getting his players involved, 37% assist rate, something like that. So yeah, I don't think I'm ready to kind of say, man, I was really off. But hey, they play Purdue this upcoming week. And if they win that one, I will be able to drink a lot of or eat a lot of crow there, because I think that might be a ceiling lifter for me.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. I think we should jump right into this week and start with the Central Michigan game. And it's kind of, in my opinion, it's kind of a tale of two halves, right? You have the first half where they come out and they were incredible defensively. They really controlled the game. They win the first half by 15 points. And they were flying around. And then in the second half, they end up losing it by 7 points. It's an 8-point game. It's unnecessarily close down the stretch. Quick ESPN check shows it was a 6-point game with 4 minutes to go. So it sweated out what looked like was going to be a blowout early. You want to start with the first half? I mean,
if I can interject at all, I think this kind of proved what we were talking about last week, Rye, where this team is going to go as Cam Jones goes, obviously, but I think we kind of know what we're going to get from Cam. He had kind of a down game with only 12 points. He's in a little bit of foul trouble. But if David Joplin's as bad as David Joplin was in this game, and I don't mean that with any disrespect to him, but 0 of 11 shooting, like, that's pretty much one of the worst games you can have, that this team is going to really struggle in big stretches. And I do think that, like, you know, the 3-point shooting is a concern for this team, because outside of Cam Jones, do you have a reliable knockdown guy?
And no, that's a great point. And to me, the first thing I said it, because obviously everyone was like distraught afterwards, and I was less so upset about the 2-for-19 or whatever it ended up being between Joplin and Gold, because I like the confidence in themselves. Like, I've spoken to Nevada, the offensive coordinator for Marquette, basically every year, and he's going to tell me, like, we trust these guys. Like, if it's a good shot, if it's a good look, if it's in rhythm, if it's not a pull-up dribble, if it's a spot-up with no one guarding you, like, we want them to shoot that, and we want to shoot it with confidence. So that's my logical brain speaking. But my, like, meatball brain is like, dude, stop. I get it. Like, I really, really understand that. I think of those 19, like 11 were unguarded, like, according to Synergy. Joplin went 0 for 6. He went 0 for 3 against Maryland, but sticking with Central Michigan, Ben Gold went 1 for 5 or something like that. So 1 for 11 combined from these two guys on unguarded shots. And again, even if you're not a good shooter, like, the average D1 unguarded spot up is 1.1 PPP, which is like 37%. So if you shot 37%, we're talking about a laugher. Like, the reason we're still discussing it right now is that there were so many misses. But I think Shaka put it best. Like, he's going to back his guys. Like, they're not, obviously Joplin and Gold kept shooting first half of the Maryland game, so it's not like they got a red light all of a sudden. So that's not going to change. What he would, and what he did say, and particularly on the right on the radio segment right after the game, when you could tell that he was not happy, he said that they lost the aggressiveness, and that's the big key. It's okay to shoot good shots, like that's fine, but you know what's better than a uncontested three is taking it to the paint, like getting fouled. Joplin had 6 points on free throws in the first half. Didn't even go inside the paint, I think, the rest of the game. So I think that's the point where, Tyler, you make a really kind of heady point. Like, less so the missed volume of shots, but the type and the shot selection. Like, shooting that, man, I think it was like 56%, the three-point rate, like 56 of the shots came from three-point line. Against a team like Central Michigan shouldn't happen. Like, that's where... not the concern for me. Like I said, I was going to burn the tape. And if you guys hadn't brought it up, like I was not going to think about it the rest of the year. Because it was one of those games that stuff just went wrong. Foul trouble for Cam and Ben, and some weird rotations. And they went on that huge 21-0 run in like 3 minutes and 14 seconds. And the game was over. Like the game was over at that point. They knew it. You take your foot off the pedal a little bit. Obviously with the foul trouble, with the missed shots, it kind of came back at them, and there were some nerve-wracking moments. But I wasn't worried about the score, more so about what happens when you don't have Cam. And I think that is still a huge glaring issue. There is just not enough in the tank if Cam has to sit for more than 5 minutes a game. And you can't ask him to play 35-plus for 20 Big East games, handling his load, playing press defense. Because I'm surprised. Tyler, I don't remember being in that than the token press on the front, in the front court. But I see Cam, he's usually one of the wings, and Chase or Demarius or Zaid are playing the top. And it's not like they're trying to go for a steal, but that's a lot of energy that you have to use after you've been trying to penetrate a defense. So long story short, I think the only kind of negative that I would take from this week, particularly from the Central Michigan game, is that there has yet to be a secondary option if Cam is on the bench that has proven to be reliable enough where I'm not kind of like biting my nails during those minutes, those 3 to 4 minutes where he's sitting.
Yeah, well, I absolutely agree. The piece about the energy, there have been several offensive possessions where I've looked at Marquette and they look exhausted because they're playing such intense energy, you know, driven defense, and they're flying around and through rotations. And, you know, it's really impressive what they're doing defensively, but there's several possessions on offense where I've looked at them and I said, like, they look like they're trying to take this off. Like they look like they need a breather right here because they just look freaking exhausted. Tyler, you wanted to say something?
Yeah. I think if we're going to shift from the burning the tapes part of this game, I think we saw two parts of this game that really carried over to the Maryland game. One, you're looking for that second option. It should be David Joplin. I think we all would agree that we would like that to be David Joplin. Stevie Mitchell scores 17 points in this game. Stevie Mitchell comes up huge in the Maryland game. And then if we're talking about more offense, we saw the beginning of Royce Parham step up with 9 points. And I want to segue now going into that Maryland game.
Can I interrupt real quick? They keep calling him Parham on the television. Is that right?
Would love to be wrong.
I mean, I really don't know. Like in my head, I say Parham, but I don't know. Like what? I gotta look it up now.
Yeah, I'd like a clarification on that because I assumed it was Parham, but
Well, his mom calls him Rolls Royce. She's on Twitter and she has a sweater that says Rolls. So we're gonna call him Rolls Royce from now on. Then we don't have to worry about what the pronunciation might be there.
So we go into this Marquette game or Maryland game as we find the Royce Parham pronunciation, which will be important, but I think that this is a game where college basketball needs it. Maryland's talking some shit beforehand, you know, about Ben Gold. Kevin Willard is an old Big East foe for Marquette, so he's familiar with them. Marquette is kind of a known, but without their two players that you kind of known about before. I think that, and you're playing a true road game, which I think we need more of in college basketball. Going into, is it College Park for Maryland? Is that right?
Yes, the Xfinity Center, yeah.
And you go into that arena. The arena's absolutely rocking. You have two high major conferences. This kind of reminded me, and we said this on Biggie's Barroom, of that Illinois game from 2 years ago where Tyler Kolek took over against a Big Ten team on the road, and they won that. And they come out and they win the game. I mean, long story short, they come out and win the game. Andre, I'll call it to you first. If you can't mention Cam Jones, Who is your best player in that game?
I mean, you have to say Stevie for the heroics at the end. Like, he's always a glue guy, and he's known as a glue guy, and obviously he's a defensive specialist, and he gives it his all, and he's obviously the heart and soul of kind of what the defense is going to be. But when it broke down, and if we're not using the KAM word right now, like, he was driving nonstop. And that's the one place where I have more Chase Ross stock than probably anyone on the internet right now. After his freshman year, I was like, this is a dude. This is a guy that's going to be in the NBA. He's going to be leading this team one day. And he's been great this year, don't get me wrong. But he still doesn't have that penetration on demand. So he can't take a guy one-on-one. So he's really good coming off a curl, coming off a dribble handoff, and kind of getting that momentum. He's great in transition. He's hit some unbelievably big shots, which is not usually a part of his game. So that is a place of growth. But if it's like 8 on the shot clock and they hand it to him at the top of the arc, he has not gotten that step where he could kind of beat his man off the dribble. And surprisingly, Stevie was living in the paint. Like, he got his shot blocked a couple times, so it's not like he was making hay a la Cam, but he was getting in. And that's the big thing, because when there is 8 seconds on the clock, when it's an ISO situation, or we're just trying to create something out of nothing, you need somebody that could get in and kind of collapse the defense, because it's going to lead to kickouts, it's going to lead to offensive rebounds, it's going to lead to shots that aren't just desperation heaves. So to me, Stevie proved, I think, and he's done it once or twice, but he proved now through a 4-game sample that he still has that offensive. He was, I don't know if you guys probably didn't follow him when he was in high school. Like, he was the Gatorade Player of the Year in Pennsylvania. Like, he set the record for points at his school. Like, he was known as a scorer coming in. And I think that was the first offseason. The debate was, is he going to be the point guard? Like, we obviously, no one knew about Kolek yet. But that's the kind of player he was. So, on the one hand, it's not a surprise that he shows that, hey, I can still kind of create off the dribble. But on the other hand, we have a lot of tape that says that's not his specialty. So to see him kind of take over in these situations, not be afraid of the moment, want to take those free throws, like, that's huge.
Ryan, now I'm going to give you the easier task. Wax poetic about Cam Jones for the next 2 minutes.
I will wax poetic about Cam Jones, but Colin Gillespie tried to recruit Stevie Mitchell out of high school to Villanova because he's a Pennsylvania kid. He said he would have been fantastic at Villanova. So we do have a little Stevie Mitchell high school connection. but yeah, Cam Jones was just, I mean, the most impressive thing for me about Cam Jones is what he does both on the ball and off the ball. Because we knew what he could do off the ball last year and two years ago, and he's continuing to do it. Shaka Smart ran a couple of nice set plays for him. He hits that one in a corner, which was a whole set play that they ran specifically for him. But he's also handling all of the point guard duties. You know, he's bringing the ball up. He's starting actions. He's running pick and rolls. He only got one assist. He was only credited with one assist, but yeah, to Chase Ross in the corner there, which was beautiful.
I know the angle was, every time I see it, I'm like, wait, how did he get that pass off?
Just beautiful basketball. But he had several nice passes. He gets everybody involved, like you mentioned. And if you're going to guard him one-on-one, especially if you're going to switch a big onto him, just give him the 2 points and run down the other. You know what I mean? Like, it's over. Yeah. I mean, this guy's hitting circus shots. He's the best scorer in the country as far as I'm concerned right now. I can't think of anybody better than him. But Tyler, do you have a pick for your player of the game outside of Cam Jones?
If you're going to take Cam Jones and Stevie Mitchell for me, I am going to, and this is what I led into, I'm going to take Parham. Or do we forget?
Parham. Yeah, Ham. He pronounces it H-A-M like a ham. Parham.
Parham. He shoots 2 of 3 from 3 in this game, 4 of 5 shooting in limited minutes. This Marquette team, in my opinion, is going to play their 5 starters kind of like Creighton does. They're going to play them 30-plus minutes in a perfect world. Maybe Ben Golden, Caden Hamilton will split a little bit more, but they want all 4 of their guys to play. So the bench minutes are going to be limited. You're not going to see Royce Parham play 25 minutes a game, in my opinion. But in that game, when you needed a little bit of extra offense, when Cam Jones was either on the bench because he did have 4 fouls, or when the defense was collapsing to him, he made them pay. And how many freshmen in the country in the 3rd, 4th game of the season for a true road game are coming out there and not looking like they want to for lack of a better word, shit their pants. He played a mature game. He played a game in which, you know, there is a very, he's a third leading scorer on a Marquette team that just won against a Big Ten team on the road. This team needs another player like that off the bench, in my opinion. I thought it would be Zaid Lowery or Trey Norman. Right now, we're not seeing those points come from them. We are seeing some good defense coming from those two, as they are longer wings. But you need some offense scoring from the bench. I would give it to Royce Parham as my third start of the game. But I do think you guys took, you know, in a good way, the two best players in this game, which those two need to be the two best players, and maybe David Joplin to win a lot of games.
The way he moves on defense, he's still not great on defense, but the way he moves just is completely different from what I saw, what is it, 9 months ago. And that's props to him, Todd Smith, the trainer, because that doesn't just happen. Like, yes, I guess they're not always trying as hard on a random high school game, but the way that he has proven that he can withstand those defensive minutes means you get to see the offense, because the offense is good. Like the step back jumper he took, he's not afraid to shoot any shot. Sometimes he should be afraid a little bit, but you want that mentality. You want someone that is not gonna shy away from the open three, and he's attacking off the dribble. I tweeted last week, but he had a beautiful kind of slip on a pick, got a bounce pass from Cam and finished an Oso floater. Like that's the kind of stuff that's a natural born scorer. So if he can show that he can withstand the defensive minutes without kind of being a net negative, I think there's decent amount of playing time for him, like at a minimum 10 to 15. And he played 13 again.
Okay. And that does lead me into, I don't think we have anything else we want to say on Maryland. Tyler, did you have anything else you wanted to touch on Maryland?
No, but I guess Ben Gold wanted to do one more thing than shoot threes. He wanted to win the game. How about that, Maryland?
All right, Derek Queen. But so, and like I said earlier, I respect the hell out of your opinion. I came on last week and I talked a lot of shit about Ben Gold defensively. I know you disagree with me. So why don't you tell everybody why I'm wrong?
You want me to say it?
Because okay. I want to hear.
Yeah, that's common. I think his appearance leads to people picking out the flaws a little bit more. And he's not quick. He lumbers. I think that's a good word for him defensively. He lumbers. But his positioning is incredible. He understands the defense so well. He has the highest block rate on the team, and his on-off splits are insane. It was something like plus 30. Again, some of that is who he's playing with. If you're playing with Cam and Stevie, you're going to be better than if you're playing with like a Trey or Zaid in those minutes. But basically, if he's on the floor, Marquette's defense is like top 10 good. If he's off the floor, again, with the caveat that it's only been four games, not a lot of opponents that you can kind of say were great, but just knowing that it's a small sample and there's a lot of caveats, like he's been really, really good, and people are just focusing on some of the inconsistent shooting that I think is translating into how the people are perceiving his defense, because he's never going to be like a paint presence. But again, 8.7% block rate, so that's really good. He's never going to be a great rebounder, but the way Marquette's defense is, like, there's a reason Oso Ighodaro was not a great rebounder, and I thought that was would keep him out of the NBA. He's got getting double-digit rebounds on the Suns, and why is that? It's because Marquette's defense shifts around so much. They ask their bigs to play on the perimeter so often, and they have that trust in switches or kind of hedging that they are not always in position to grab. So I'm not going to say he's a great rebounder. It's not like a one. He's 0-for-4 on tips, on the starting tips, and it's driving me nuts because he's missed twice now, like on the jump ball, where he gets up higher, he's up in the air first, and he misses it. So obviously, like, there's nits to pick. I'm not saying that he is the best defensive center since Patrick Ewing. All I'm saying is when the options are Caden Hamilton, Royce Parham, or a small ball five, Jop, Ben Gold is head, shoulders, knees, and toes above that. So I have no complaints at this point in time from what I've seen from
him. Can I counter, right?
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah, go ahead, guys.
So one, paint touches, and Andre, you are 100% more analytically inclined than I am, so I'm going to give a lot more eye test, which you can probably disprove. One of the things about Marquette, and one of the biggest obstacles to me, is their rebounding. Because of the way that they play, I absolutely agree. When you're switching, you know, one through five a lot of the time, you're going to have less chances. Ben Gold is being out-rebounded by every single player in the starting five right now. And I know that we can't just take rebounding numbers, as he's also playing less minutes. So you can sit here and say that. I totally agree with you. I also think Ben Gold is not the strongest. So sometimes when he's put in the paint for standard post-up moves, he does struggle a little bit more. He has height. He is 7 feet tall. If you cannot block a shot a game at 7 feet tall, or what is he, Ryan? 6'11"?
I think he's 6'10".
He's listed at 6'11", so we'll split the difference. I think when you're listed that tall, you will get some blocks, even if you get blown by sometimes. I'm not saying Ben Gold is a bad defender, and I think you made a great point that over Caden Hamilton, over David Joplin, and over Royce Parham, he has to be the five, and he's the best guy out there. But I still think that the five position, whether defensively, and his offensive game is a whole different thing, that he needs to figure out as well. But defensively, the five position is the weakest position for me on this team right now. And I'm not saying Ben Gold's bad, but, and I understand he's the best of a lot of evils, but he needs to rebound a little bit better for me to be bought in completely.
And one thing we've seen Shaka do is he's bringing doubles onto that five. Ben Gold gets posted up a lot. Like Chase Ross has been rotating down. I can think of at least two or three examples in the Maryland game. So it seems like he's really making an emphasis to not leave Gold on an island in the post. I think, what you said about his strength may be correct at this point in his career. But I did watch the Maryland game and him defensively a little closer after reading your tweet. And I got to say, he was just fine in the Maryland game. There was not any major issues. So I will dial back some of what I said last week and we'll see. And, I'll send you some lowlights in our DMs if I catch them. But for now, I will take a pause and say what you said about him being the best of the options at the five, 100% correct.
I mean, to Tyler's point, Cam Jones has a higher defensive. I am, and again, this is just me because I'm a nerd. I hate rebounds per game. Because like you said, it's so dependent on minutes. So rebounding rate, to me, like defensive rebound rate is great because it is based off the amount of rebounds that were available on the possessions that you played. So having said that, he's got a lower defensive rebounding rate than Cam Jones, which should never happen, right? Like, I don't care like how your defense is set up. If your five is less than your starting point guard, Mr. Do-Everything scorer, like that's good for Cam. Awesome. Like, I appreciate that he's taking it seriously because he never did the past 3 years. But yes, that is a point where there's probably a lot of room for growth.
All right. Anybody have anything else? Go ahead, Doug.
Well, I was going to say, if we want to swing it, I think if we normally talk about the week that was, but if we're going to talk about Marquette, especially this week, I think the week that's coming up is the most important week. I don't want to say in Marquette basketball history because they've had such good weeks recently where, Big East regular season. But this is a very important week. You're playing the team that made the national championship on Tuesday, and then you play Georgia on Saturday. I guess I'll start with Andre. This Purdue game, you have them losing it. Everyone at Marquette, you hear that? Paint Touches has you guys losing this game. No, but what is the matchup concern that has you thinking that they might struggle?
I just think Purdue has a really good read on what Marquette does. Obviously, way different. So they've played them the past two seasons. I think they've played them like five of the last 7 years. So it's been a lot of Purdue. But generally speaking, Matt Painter is a hell of a coach. And I get that Zach Edey kind of took all of the oxygen around the run last year and their success, and obviously lost to a 16 seed, which kind of popped that bubble even more. But to me, Matt Painter is up there with Dan Hurley, and like, if I had to start a team, like, who would I start with? Because he has done it through multiple like roster iterations and in doing it his way. So just right off the bat, like, regardless of who's playing, like, I have an immense fear of playing against Matt Painter. That's just number one. Number two, Braden Smith is the kind of player that I think is going to kill Marquette this year. Again, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I've misread everything. I've been wrong before. I'm probably wrong like six times a day. So this is not to say that you should go ahead and bet the house on Purdue, whatever you're getting. What I am saying is that kind of player, someone that has the ability to both shoot and penetrate. So it just causes a lot of issues for the way that Marquette's defense over rotates, because he's going to find that player. So now it's a matter of, okay, are Purdue shooters going to make their shots? Are they going to going to hit the looks that we are going to give them. And it's just one of those early season games where Marquette doesn't have a continuity advantage, like I talked about earlier today. So I think it's a toss-up. I don't think, like I said, it's going to, Marquette should be a huge underdog. I see on KenPom, Marquette's favored by 2. I think it'll probably be like a 1.5 point spread in Marquette's favor for betting odds. I just think if they can pull this out, if they could beat another like bona fide high end Power Five team, it really speaks volumes about it. So I won't get hung up if they, obviously I'll still be like, throwing stuff at the TV if they do lose, but once I calm down a little bit, it's not going to be as big of a loss because you have one in the pocket. You have a Q1 already in your back pocket.
I think you made a really good point about Braden Smith and how he'll be able to manipulate the defense to have an open shooter. I wonder if they try to switch Ben Gold more. I feel like this is one where they'll really miss Oso Igudaro so that they don't leave those shooters open in the corner. But if I were to give any kind of counterpoint, because I think you did a really good job summarizing it, but Matt Painter tends to run some very complicated offensive sets. This Marquette defense is fantastic at disrupting and deflecting and, you know, not allowing teams to make these passes that they want. If they can take them out of those complicated sets and make them play a more simple style of basketball, I think that could be a significant positive for Marquette.
Yeah, and I will say, I know, Andre, I think as Marquette fan, which you bleed Marquette colors, I think you said earlier, you're kind of protecting your heart a little bit too. Like, you're like, you know, in case something goes, you don't want to be too. I'll say right now, Stevie Mitchell is going to lock Braden Smith up. Braden Smith, Stevie Mitchell is one of the best defensive guards in the country. And Cam Jones is going to expose Fletcher Loyer, or Stevie Mitchell is going to expose Fletcher Loyer, depending on who's guarding them. Last year when Marquette lost to Purdue, it was because they had a 7'6" guy guarded by 6'9" Oso Igudaro. They do not have that this year. Marquette, to me, is almost as good as they were last year. And I know Purdue just beat Alabama, and I know they're seeing growth from other players, but you lost the best player in the country for the last 2 years, and you're going into this game where you said Marquette doesn't have a continuity edge. Well, Purdue doesn't have that continuity edge either, where they are winning some games because of that, where Alabama, you know, they have Mark Sears, but they had brought in some transfers too. I don't think that Purdue's seen as, you know, as good of a team this early in the season as Marquette looks like. And I think Stevie Mitchell will either eat Fletcher Loyer's lunch and make him cry, or he's going to lock Braden Smith down the way that UConn kind of did in the national championship game with Steph Castle. And if you take Braden Smith away, I don't know how good this Purdue team is outside of Braden Smith, who I know is really good. And I think I would rather have it where your best defensive player is going to guard their best offensive player, because I think defense can win more than offense can.
Andre, can't thank you enough for coming on here. Everybody, first off, I'm sure you're all following Paint Touches because he's the best Marquette account on Twitter. But make sure you subscribe to his website, you know, put your email in there. You know, interact. He's putting out better material than like anybody for any team. You guys are really lucky to have him covering your own team.
And if I can one more time wax poetic about Paint Touches, one of the things I know, Andre, Ryan got his brown nosing section out of the way early. I figured we'd bookend the episode. One of the things I do like is you're not just relying on analytics. You are watching the games. So we're not just sitting here and you going, Ben Gold is this on when they're playing defense. You're also saying, yeah, I understand he has shortcomings, but, you know, so it is really good. And hey, pack Pfizer on Tuesday. I just looked at some of these ticket prices. They're a little low. So get to the game, sell out an NBA arena and show Purdue that they still can't beat a team in the Big East.
I love it. Let's go.
All right. And as always, thanks for pulling up a stool.